Hi, and welcome to the Evolve Lactation Podcast. I'm Christine, an IBCLC and lactation career coach. I'm host of the Evolve Lactation Community, a membership group which helps current and aspiring lactation care providers optimize their lactation practice and career through resources, information, and mindset shifts that help them to clarify and reclaim their purpose and mission in lactation work. I've been in the lactation field for over 22 years, and this podcast is my way of sharing with you what I've learned and what the future may hold for those of us supporting families and babies. Whether you're seasoned or studying, I hope this show will make you think and inspire you to act. Let's get started. On this very special episode of the Evolve Lactation Podcast, I have a conversation with Nicole Longmire of the Milkshakes Podcast, and this is going to be a long and winding and wide-ranging conversation that I think you will really enjoy and get a lot out of. So let's get started and jump right in.
Thank you so much, first of all.
Well, thank you. I'm really excited because I have watched your Instagram account because I don't really use like TikTok or anything like that. And so I've really watched your account blossom and become something that it, you know, in the beginning, everybody's account sort of seems similar. And then yours just became something that's really unique. And I have appreciated seeing that. And, you know, it's just a reminder that it takes so much work to put something like that together. I can't even understand the amount of work that's taking for you.
So. Yeah. Well, thank you for that compliment, because it kind of has been like a labor of love, you know, just like anything that we do, right? Like all of our projects and your book, and you're going to tell me all about that. But when I first started my Instagram, I feel like I had like no identity, you know? And so when you're just starting out, you kind of are like emulating other people and other mm-hmm. creators, and you're like, well, that's what's getting attention, or that's what's getting follows and likes. And there's this part of me that's very I hate that's the game. Mm-hmm. Like, I hate that the game is I need people to follow me and like me. Like, it's just icky, you know? I'm in the like older millennial crowd. And so, you know, unlike my teenagers, I was a teenager when we didn't have any
right
social media or internet, you know, you relate. And so I'm constantly on them about, you know, it doesn't matter how many people like your whatever or follow your, but it does matter to me. And so that's been kind of like a hurdle, you know, for me to sort of get over, something to kind of like reckon with, is like, that's the game. And so I feel like I've sort of like rebranded my identity on Instagram a couple of times and really had to decide like, how do I want to show up, and how controversial do I want to be? And there's plenty of people that don't want to follow me. And there's lots of people that have unfollowed me. And unfortunately, there's actually quite a few IBCLCs that have spoken to me, you know, and expressed that they don't like the way that I am. And I've even been blocked by a few, which I think is really strange and unfortunate. But I have to be authentic and true to myself. So the fact that you, like one of my idols in this work, thinks that I have a great Instagram is like, if nobody's following it, me except for you, like, I'm good. Wow.
Well, I definitely don't feel deserving of something like that. I just, you know, I feel like we're people. There's a person behind your Instagram account. It's not a team. It's not, you know, yeah. It's not a business. It's a person whose ultimate goal is to teach. And you're doing that. And even though you can see the sort of the evolution of what you've done, where in the beginning it was very much teaching mothers and expectant mothers and parents about breastfeeding. And then it became something bigger than that. And so to be able to say, My account is 4. Who is your, what they call ideal customer avatar? I couldn't tell you for sure that yours is a fellow IBCLC, an aspiring lactation care provider, or a mother who's breastfeeding. You can't really say it's for any one of those people. It's for all of them. And when we can bring that together in that kind of a way, with the fact that you use language that is both scientific but accessible, I think that's one of the biggest things, is that you're very clear with messaging. You're very accurate on things, and you take the time to explain concepts in detail. And a lot of people just, they don't, because they feel like social media should be short. It should be short sound bites, and you don't shy away from complicated things. And so I guess I see a lot of myself in you. You just are putting it together in a way that is so beautiful, and it's graphically pretty, and there's a branding to it that matters, and all of those things. So each one of those pieces makes a difference. And to think that you're learning something, from a presentation, from a book, from wherever, and you're immediately, I know this, even having not spoken to you about it, I know you're immediately figuring out, how can I
Yeah.
put this into a format that more people will see because I put it in that format? And that is the value of social media. That is all. I mean, really, there's a thing that I talk about a little bit in different ways, in different places, where a lactation care provider is not just like a box full of knowledge about lactation. And then, when you decide to be our client, you sign up and you pay us, and then we just like burp out all this knowledge all over
Yeah.
you. The knowledge isn't behind the paywall. What's behind the paywall of lactation care is the ability to assess, the ability to counsel, all the skills that we bring to that. It's not what we read in the textbook and what we passed an exam on. It's really about how we are with people, how we interact with people. So I think that that's a really valuable piece of what you're doing. And because you're able to sort of show that on social media, nothing is hidden about you or about lactation. You are willing to engage people in ways that I'm not. I don't have that.
Yeah.
I have worries about things that, I'm going to say and sort of declare in my book, and things that I say in presentations. I worry about those things. And, I deal with criticism when it comes, like we all do, but it doesn't feel good. It's not easy, especially when
No.
we know that our intentions are to teach and to make people have a better experience.
Yeah, 100%. I feel so seen right now.
Good.
I just want to say, like, you get it. And that is so meaningful to me, because just the nature of the type of person that I am, it is really important. And it's important to all of us to be seen and to be understood. And but that is my goal, is to be this authentic person. And I have received the compliment a few times from clients who will tell me, I've been following you for a while, and you are exactly who I thought you were going to be from your social media. And to me, that's like, I'm doing it right, because I want to be authentic and want to be that person. And you're so right. What you get behind the paywall, right? Like, I don't want to be a gatekeeper. Like, I'm not like the keeper of all the knowledge. Here it is. Have it, have it, have it. And the magic of working with that lactation care provider is in sharing that space and having them assess and point out and nurture you. It's, I mean, it's just so powerful when you have that person in your space giving you that, that support that you need. So, yeah, thank you so much for saying all of that. That's so
You're
awesome.
welcome. It reminds me of something else that I talk about a lot, which is mentoring. It's been a huge,
Me too.
important part of what my career has been, because I was mentored so well by somebody who took the time, and put all of the intention into mentoring. And that mattered so much to who I ultimately became and how I do the work. And then I got the privilege of mentoring other people. So that to me is just a huge part of what we do. What good is it if, 37,000 IBCLCs are out here right now working and not mentoring the next generation? What's the point? Like, what are we doing it for? I really believe that. And there's so many people out there who want to mentor, but they are very intimidated by the process. And I think what I would want them mostly to think about is that mentoring is more like building a relationship with your lactation client than you think it is. You think it's this crazy process and you're going to have checklists and you're going to have to, work with somebody that doesn't know what they're doing. And it's never like that. It really isn't. I'm not saying there's not conflict and there's not, difficulty, and but it's teaching in the same exact way that you're already used to doing. So if you are, curious about mentoring, there's also no formalized way to learn how to do it, which is frustrating on one level because that is a barrier that's going to prevent some people from getting into it, but it's also freedom. And so what we've seen, I think, over the last few years is a lot of people get extremely frustrated with the fact that people don't have access to mentoring opportunities to become an IBCLC. And so they made them. They became mentors and they are working with people and they're being creative and resourceful. And that's really the key here. If they're not going to formalize the process, then we're all going to do it the way we need to do it. And we need to do it by building relationship with the people that we're teaching and leading into this field. And what you find when you're mentoring is that you have this vision that, you're going to be in charge of all the stuff and you're going to have all this work to do. And what happens is after the beginning, it's more of you watching and observing the person who's learning to do. You really have to go back and read old things about apprenticeship and understand, people who are becoming a blacksmith didn't become a blacksmith by watching a blacksmith work. They did it by making mistakes. And, we can be really protective of our clients. And sometimes that's a reason that keeps people out of mentoring. But that's not a fair thing to do because, there's no guarantees in this world. So you need to be prepared to fill in for yourself no matter what happens. And so, I think there's a lot about mentoring that, just really thinking about that relationship part of it that makes a big difference if you look at it that way. And if we can get more people mentoring, it only grows the profession, not only in people, but in knowledge and background and perspective. And if you're one of those people who are frustrated, and came into this because you were frustrated about the support you didn't get, mentoring is the perfect way to really give back. It's not just, I'm going to become and I'm going to give the support, but I'm also going to make sure I leave two, three, four, five people behind me that can also do it. That matters so much.
Oh, that lands for me totally because it's like I'm gonna build this army of people, like I will make sure that that people aren't experiencing the same lack of support, that I had. And I think that's true for a lot of us. We come to this because we struggled, and I think, the people that have reached out to me, I'm so glad you just brought up mentorship. And we have so much that we're going to talk about, but that has been, I know, a passion of yours, like you, like without even talking and knowing you personally yet, I know that that's been like your thing, and I can see why, because I'm starting to get interested in it too, and it is so rewarding. I just also like adult learning, like I like teaching adults. Yeah, it's really fulfilling. I don't know. I just really like it. I think it's very unique. And you're very right about that relationship because that person is coming with just like that client, right? Is coming to us with their values and their goals and their ideas and their wisdom. So is that new lactation provider, or that potential. They're coming with gifts, and skills and knowledge and we don't want to gatekeep that. We want to give that and coach them. And so, yeah, I just love that so much. So you got into mentoring when? Like, I know you were hospital-based for a while. Give me just a little bit of like your background.
Yeah, so I started I am a person who came into the field through support groups. So that was my first entry into the field. And it was not a formalized group. It was through a hospital, the IBCLC who worked there, she led it. So it wasn't a named group or anything like that. And then I ultimately was working in the hospital with her. That's where I got my mentoring experience. And that's where I became an IBCLC. And then in about 2012, and if you're a listener of mine, you'll remember this story from my interview with Adrian. We went to a lactation conference that required us to drive out of town. So, of course, on the way home, oh boy, did we have a lot to talk about and ideas and things. And so, what ultimately came from that was that we put together a 45-hour lactation training course that we ended up teaching in our community for years. And we taught so many people. And what happens when somebody comes through a course like that is that then they're looking around for more and they want to, you know, many of them wanted to become IBCLCs. And so we were looking for opportunities to do that. At the same time, we were trying to grow a professional network in our community. And we decided to become or to form a chapter of USLCA, which is the United States Lactation Consultant Association. And through that, we wanted to do a project that allowed us to, because we worked together in the hospital. We saw these gaps in care in the community. Our community didn't have, it wasn't just like, oh, IBCLC care is expensive. It was, there aren't any that do private practice here. So that's not even a thing. You get help in the hospital. If you have WIC, you get help from WIC. And maybe if you're really persistent, you call the hospital and you can come back for maybe for an outpatient appointment. That was it. So we needed something else to fill that gap. I read an article in the clinic, the Journal of Clinical Lactation about Baby Cafe. And before long, we opened a baby cafe here in Ba or in Bakersfield. And through Baby Cafe, we developed opportunities to mentor potential IBCLCs. So the people we were teaching in the courses were coming through there. They could volunteer with us. It was really such a perfect setting to be mentoring people there because we were seeing multiple people, different kinds of problems, babies of all ages, all the things that you need to see throughout your clinical mentoring experience. And it was an ongoing thing. We had, you know, at the height of our in-person meetings, right when the pandemic shut down, we were having three in-person meetings a week.
Wow.
Now, since we reopened, we have one in-person and one virtual, but we also do care in another way. So we still have lots of, you know, we're still providing tons of help. We just do it in a different way. But those in-person meetings provided a really great opportunity for people to get 8 to 10 hours per week, supervised by multiple IBCLCs. So they were getting wisdom, guidance, teaching, observation by you know, a couple of different IBCLCs with varying expertise, with varying experience levels. I mean, we have an IBCLC in our baby cafe who's been a nurse for more than 60 years, and she's been an IBCLC since 1995. So the amount of information, guidance, teaching that she can bring to a situation is really unmatched, you
Yeah.
know, and many other very experienced people. And that made for a really rich mentoring experience for some of the most amazing IBCLCs that I've ever seen came through that process. I mean, they are all doing incredible things. They are incredible people who, like you said, brought their gifts, their backgrounds, their frustrations with whatever, and they're brilliant. I mean, all of them are brilliant. Not that they didn't start out brilliant, but they really just bloomed.
Yeah. You know what was I was thinking while you were describing this scene is that's how women learned how to breastfeed, right? With all this wisdom and all these other women around them. So it's sort of like teaching, I mean, it's exactly the same. You know, we're giving wisdom to the clients that we have, right? Like I always feel like I'm like returning wisdom. Like that's sort of my you know, I'm just giving you back what you lost. You have it, you know. I'm just helping you see it, right? And it reminds me of that kind of way of thinking, right? Like just learning from all these other brilliant minds with all these other from all these other walks of life with all these other backgrounds. That's just so amazing. It sounds like such a dream, you know, such a dream way to learn.
It is. And we know this because we know from evidence that mothers and parents learn about breastfeeding in peer support groups at levels that they do not learn from one-on-one consultations and conversations. It's really important to see breastfeeding happen and to see all the other things that happen around baby care. When fathers and partners are present in peer support kind of settings, the things that they observe and that they see, maybe they don't say it in the moment, but they see things that they can take home and use when they're providing support. And when new parents are watching each other deal with all the other things and they don't feel alone anymore, it feels like, okay, yeah, breastfeeding's hard, but heck, all of this stuff is really hard. Even just getting this baby buckled into the car seat is hard. So we're not the only ones. Those people are struggling, and heck, they look like they're more put together than I am. It's all those things that we do in our minds that tell us that this is too hard. I can't do it. I'm not the kind of person that can do it. All it takes is seeing one person that you feel is like you. And when you're one-on-one with somebody, there are times where the comparison part of it becomes difficult. And that's a really important reason why it's very important as you are growing in your lactation career to be very sure of how you bring your personal experience into what you do. Putting your baggage on a shelf, not letting that leak into the room, it's really important because if you do not already have the relationship established and there's not already a rapport, and you start out with something that's like, oh, yeah, my baby did that too, or this is what I did, it becomes a situation where the person can start to compare and say, okay, well, you did that, but you're not like me. I'm not going to be able to do that. But they may not be able to say that. And there's also the opportunity or the potential that sometimes when people are bringing traumatic breastfeeding experiences into the room where they're trying to help somebody else, their trauma is coming out too. And it's really, really a handicap for people who are trying to deal with their problems. It can really slow things down for them because they're in empathy mode. And so their empathy for what they're hearing from you, that's not helpful for them. Our goal is to make sure that they are the focus and that they always feel like they're the focus. And so when we turn around and make it about us, that makes it really a challenge and it doesn't work as well. And people don't always realize that they're doing it. And so, back to the social media conversation, sometimes when we see that in people's social media sort of personalities, I know it's very trendy and it's very popular to be like, I'm going to be vulnerable. I'm going to show people things about myself and I'm going to do that. There's a point at which it becomes, does this person talk like this all the time? Is that a person that I would want to help me with breastfeeding? Because I don't know, do they ever like put that away? Is that, and I, you can't, it's not that you can take your history is your history, it's your story, but you have to make sure people can understand that your history isn't what you're going to bring to the table when you're trying to help them. So, there's also something that I saw in a recent post that you had about virtue signaling. And, when people are adding things into their, trying it, there's a nuance to trying to grow your personality or your brand by making sure that you're bringing in lots of perspectives. But sometimes it just comes across as like fake empty words or phrases or, ways of thinking about things that isn't really you. People can see right through that. And it does not make them want you to be their lactation consultant or their mentor. So that can be really hard. That's not to say that sharing your personal experiences is wrong all the time and no one should ever do it. And we should let people into our home or our backyard or whatever when we're trying to build, that kind of relationship on social media. We do not need to let people know about us, but we have to be careful that it's not something that feels like it's going to interfere and that we know for our own health, we don't bring that in because if you are not managing your own experience as well from your lactation, your pregnancy, your birth, if you're bringing that in every time, how exhausted are you?
Yeah.
You're reliving that every single day. That's not healthy for you, and you're not going to be able to do this work for very long.
Yeah. No, you're so right. There's so much in what you just said. First, I just did today one of those, like, here's some vulnerable things about me. And it's so funny that you're bringing this up because I didn't jump on the trend right away because I thought, oh my gosh, I'm pretty transparent, you
You
know, I
are.
think, right? So I don't know that I need to do one of these. But I don't know, something just told me, you know, do one, but I was very careful to not make any of the things that I was sharing anything about my feeding journeys. I've spoken here and there on social media about my birth trauma, and certainly I speak about my infant loss. But I am mindful that I don't really want you to know a whole lot about my feeding journey because just like what you said, you know, that's not something that I want you to worry is going to interfere. And I think, you know, to the point of like your baggage, I actually did your you had a group and a class
That's
and
how we met.
And it was so great. And I was at that time, we were stationed in Germany. I was pregnant because I got pregnant pretty quick when we got there. And I was doing my internship at the Army Hospital. And I would drive, I don't know if I've told you this yet, but I would drive, it was about a 25, maybe 30-minute drive up this mountain to where the hospital was, and I would listen to the Lactation Training Lab podcast. And so your voice, like if I close my eyes, right, I'm like driving to the hospital through the mountain. But it was so helpful. It was so great. Obviously, you know, the things that you share on your podcast is amazing. And for anyone who's listening that doesn't follow you and doesn't listen to your episodes, I will make sure they know how to find you because it was so helpful. But then that group that I participated in, where we had to dissect, you know, our experience. And at that time, I only had one breastfeeding journey because Owen wasn't born yet. And that breastfeeding experience was over a decade old. And I didn't really realize the impact of really sort of like unpacking that and thinking about, you know, what do I need to resolve? What's like unresolved for me that I need to sort of deal with on a personal level? But then what do I need to examine about the way that I currently am interacting with patients, that I might be bringing some of that in without realizing it, you know? And so it really helped me be more aware and pay more attention to not doing that. And I'll get asked now, like, you know, people who know that I've lost my baby will say, like, how do you do this? Like, how are you around babies? And like, sometimes I'm like, I don't know. I really don't know. The human spirit is really amazing, right? What we're capable of. But the real answer is it takes work and it takes commitment and it takes personal work to keep the two things. I'm trying to avoid using the word separate because it's not separate and
No.
it's possible to completely separate it. You know, my love and passion for what I do is because of, you know, what I've been through. But to be able to pull from that experience strength and resources and knowledge and not baggage and trauma and triggers and all of that stuff. So it's a tough thing for lactation providers to do, but I so agree. It's so important. It's so needed, especially because, again, most of us come to this field because we're fired up about something. We're fired up about what happened or didn't happen. And so that's what we're leading with.
Yes, that's the key. And, you know, it can happen. Think of any clinical issue that might have plagued a person in their breastfeeding journey. And then they overcame it or they didn't. And that's the reason that they decided they needed to go into this work. And then subtly, in ways they may not realize, that becomes a thing that has more weight for them. So maybe they're putting too much emphasis on certain, you know, clinical things. Maybe they're bringing their own beliefs about what happened with them into it, despite the fact that they have new knowledge, you know, from their training. Those things happen. And I know it's great to think that we're all like going into every single thing perfectly objectively, but the fact is we bring our own whole universe behind us, just like we do with anything that has to do with health. We bring our own feelings about food into anything that we are involved in. And it's, you know, part of that. It's just part of your growth. It's got to be part of your career growth to be able to take stock sometimes and understand, why are you always seeing this? Or why are you always looking for that? Or why are you having trouble? And it does, you know, if it's really happening, then either you're burning out, you're getting burnout really quickly or really frequently, and you're having trouble dealing with it. You're feeling like you're working in the wrong place, or you're super frustrated about everything. Like everything feels like it's working against you, or you're really having trouble with clients and holding on to them because they're not feeling it, you know, and obviously you're not feeling it either. So there can be some pretty big signs that come out, but you know, it's there for everybody. Everybody that I know, the people that I know closely that I've worked with for years, IBCLCs, especially, you know, that I've known for 10 to 20 years from the hospital and from Baby Cafe, we know each other really well on professional and personal level. And every one of them can tell you where their biases are. That's why they're good at what they do. We've talked about it. When they have trouble dealing with something, we talk about it. And even the more, you know, the very experienced ones, we know where our individual biases are. And so the beauty of working in a group like that is that anybody at any time can step back and say, I can't do this one. This one is a lot for me. And somebody else can step in so that it never feels like, you know, a total burden. And every individual private practice lactation consultant needs to have people they trust. I mean, obviously, even if it's just because you're sick, you know, and you can't take care of somebody right, we need to have people that we trust. And that requires connection, but it requires effort. You can't just say that you know somebody because you're in the same Facebook group as them. Like that, it doesn't work like that. And some of the Facebook groups that, you know, that people are in at this point have tens of thousands of people in them, and they think they're learning stuff in there and they're connecting with people. I don't know about that. You really have to be intentional about building connections with people in small groups where you get to know stuff about each other, you learn from each other, and you know, you take the time to make those relationships build as well. Wow, I'm really on relationships today, aren't I?
Yeah, it's the theme.
Really is.
Yeah, no, it is. And it's such a great theme, right? It's really the heart of everything that we do. And yeah, well, very well said. So the other thing that I learned from you, and I've learned so many gems from you, but that I would love to hear you talk a little bit more about is the first 100 hours. And I know your book's coming out, so we can like talk about the book, but you've had this concept for a while. And I remember doing some of your workshops. You had another program that was just about, I think it was the masterclass, first 100 hours masterclass. And I really needed that at the time because I was doing, like I said, my internship at the hospital, and I hadn't worked with that, you know, right after birth, you know, group yet. I had been doing home shadowing, you know, IBCLCs that do outpatient and home visits and things like that. So it was so helpful. And I also find, continue to find so much value in that focusing on that first 100 hours because that's where so many things go wrong. So tell me more about first 100 hours. how you use it, how you teach it, and then we'll talk about the book because I'm so excited for you.
Awesome, thank you. Yeah, I mean, it's such an important time frame chronologically that it's like called out in the detailed content outline for people who are going to take the IBCLC exam. It's that important of a time frame. So much happens during that time. And so if you work in a hospital or if you do some of your mentoring experience in a hospital, you are exposed to that over and over and over again. And what you see over time is that there are many people who are caring for mothers and babies in hospitals who don't actually really understand what is happening in lactation during that time. There's a difference between being taught how to provide breastfeeding support and assistance in the first hours and days of lactation and understanding human lactation during that time, all the things that are around it. So, you may be good at latching babies, but if you don't really understand how lactation works, when does milk production start? I mean, if you ask a variety of healthcare providers right now, if you ask 10, you will get 10 different answers. And there's not 10 answers to that question. The knowledge about how human lactation works is standing existing science that's been there for a really long time. So everyone should know it, but they don't, unfortunately. So as a lactation care provider, you often run into situations where you're just like shaking your head thinking, what are they thinking? Like, how do they not understand this? Or what part of it don't they understand? And that was the genesis really of this concept, a specific clinical case for me, where I found myself shaking my head and saying, how does this person not understand how this works? Not the client, not the patient. She had no, there was no reason she should have known this information until I gave it to her, right? But all of the other people who have tons of experience working with new mothers like her, with preterm babies like she had, it just didn't make any sense to me. And so I started trying to figure out what was it about the way we were teaching people to support breastfeeding that was failing them in for them to be able to understand. So it's really this this focus on the time frame and what is actually happening during this time frame, because it's not mysterious, even though it seems mysterious. And that's the part that really trips people up, because if you think about it, a lot of times the people that we see who are struggling to get back to breastfeeding because they've run into an early problem. And so, back at the beginning of my career, when there weren't pumps were not really a thing. People would give some formula and they would start doing some formula feeding. And nowadays, we see some people giving some formula and we see some people using pumps, right? And then they're seeing us and they're asking us all these questions and they're trying to figure out what their goals are, because now they feel like the original goal they had isn't going to work. And they can't seem to go back to trusting what breastfeeding is because they had an early problem. So where can we have the most impact? By restoring their ability to trust breastfeeding. And we have to start by making sure all the people who are working with people who are breastfeeding early on, they understand all of this so that they can be building in that trust. Because it really is about trusting it. It's like I remember working with people who were, they were giving that one bottle, and they would say, I can't seem to stop giving this one bottle every day, even though we've worked on this and breastfeeding feels like it's going fine and everything's good, but I still feel like I have to give that one bottle. Well, that's a leap of faith, right? And, that's something we learn to help people get through by looking for signs, by looking for outcomes, by watching for certain things. Well, that's exactly what you're doing in the hospital. You're watching for certain things to happen, but you have to make sure that all the things we know about how to get breastfeeding started off well are actually happening. We know what those things are. This is not a mystery. So it's got to be something in the way we're talking about it, the way we're having our attitudes and behaviors around it. that's got to be the piece that's leaving people feeling like you can't trust breastfeeding. I mean, that's basically what anyone is saying when they say, well, you should probably just give a little formula. You should probably just pump and see how much milk you have. You know, all these things that get said to new parents, they just betray a complete lack of faith in what breastfeeding can do. And you don't have faith in breastfeeding. Like, I think that there's this thing that people think that only people who have personally experienced breastfeeding can trust it, right? And that if you've never experienced it, you know, it's just book knowledge. No, these are just like anything else that we know fairly well about human health.
Yeah.
These are established things around the world. Like everyone
Yeah.
does this. Our
It's a body
information comes.
function. It's
Yeah,
something
it is.
the body
We're all humans. It's been happening for thousands of years. The World Health Organization puts out the 10 steps, right? It's not coming from one country or one culture or anything. This is all just human beings and how this is supposed to work. So that's really the heart of the first 100 hours. It's just getting back to that being able to trust it. And the only way you're going to get people to trust it is to have the information that they need and to give them ways of watching to make sure that it's working. That makes sense, right? You don't want to worry that the baby's not getting enough or the baby's, you know, not going to breastfeed enough. You want to have a way to watch it. So that's all sort of built into the program.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the way I've been teaching it, you know, all along, but now I just put it all together in a book.
No, that's brilliantly said too. I'm sitting here wondering though, like if people are listening and they know this, right? They work with mamas and babies, they experience they're like, "Yep, I got it. I got it. I got it. That's what's happening. That's what we need." But then they ask, okay, well, but how do I deal with those nurses who don't have that knowledge? Or how do I deal with that doctor or that pediatrician without that knowledge? How do I, this one lactation consultant or one, lactation counselor, because we know there's value in all levels of lactation support. So whoever it is, right, that's available and is supporting, how do I come up against that? Like, how do I make a difference when if everyone would just take the first 100 hours masterclass, that would solve it. But we know not everybody's going to do it. So what do you say about that? How do we deal with the competing, I don't know what the word is, influence?
Yeah, I think influence is the right word.
Yeah.
I think that because I have the experience of working at two hospitals who are doing their baby friendly designation journeys, I had a lot of opportunities to do this, to be able to teach and to impact nurses and doctors on a daily basis. And to work with a lot of people who brought a lot of attitudes and beliefs about breastfeeding that were sort of counter to what we were trying to do. And, you know, I know a lot of people have said this over the years, but it's sort of a consumer demand kind of thing. And we have to get to the patients. We really have to get them earlier, of course. I mean, we're lactation care providers, so one of our favorite hobbies is lamenting the lack of prenatal breastfeeding education that people have, right? We always talk about that. We always talk about how that's sort of the root cause of everything that's happening nowadays, right? But it really is true. And so we can't sit and just and worry about that and try to figure out. It's not going to be like it was, you know, in 2000 when the hospital where I worked had full weekend classes where people were learning about breastfeeding. And, you know, they went to classes for 6 weeks in a row on Monday nights. And it's not going to be like that again. That's not going to happen. But there's got to be a better way that we can talk about it with people in those settings and that we can show them basically that when we're working with patients, that we are demonstrating, our patients are demonstrating it to them. And that's all built into what I've written in the book. Ways to respond to like common things that people will say and people will bring up and reasons that people doubt breastfeeding. And That is such a huge important part. And it would be great if we can get those people to read the book, because then we have a revolution, you
Right,
know,
right.
and it's all built in there about basically why do people doubt it? And there's tons and tons and tons of reasons. Like if you've ever sat down, I'm sure that you have, like, made a list of myths about breastfeeding that are out there, and there's thousands probably. There's like hundreds of reasons that I can think of off the top of my head why people doubt breastfeeding. And the other part of it is what we were talking about before. What are they bringing to the table from their personal experiences? Not just their personal, like, they breastfed experiences,
Yeah.
their spouses' experiences, their cousins, their sisters, their mothers, their grandmothers, their patients. If you're a pediatrician who's ever seen a baby where group B strep got missed and they got really, really sick, you are always going to worry about group B strep, and you're going to have a specific order set around that, and you are going to be really, really diligent about making sure that never happens again. That's what doctors are sort of taught to do, and they pick up the same things about breastfeeding. If they ever had a failure to thrive breastfed baby, what was the result of that? Like, what got missed in that? Was it something that they missed? What they're going to be thinking to themselves, what could I have done differently? You know, but they often will put that on themselves, their staff. You know, they might be thinking we missed something, when in actuality, a lot of people missed something. You
Yeah.
know, it wasn't only on them. There's so many factors that go into poor outcomes, and people take it upon themselves. And of course, like I said, they bring in their personal experiences and their personal feelings about it. And so, you know, if your personal experience as a doctor is that you had to pump for your babies who were born preterm, and you pumped for an amount of time that felt comfortable for you, and you bottle fed your babies, then when a mother is in your office and they're talking about breastfeeding and they say, well, is it okay if I just pump and bottle feed? Because that's the way that people usually say it. Those are the words that they use.
Right.
And that doctor will very likely say, yes, it's okay. That's what I did. And they're not going to go into any more detail than that. And I'm not saying that they have to or that they should. But especially when people encounter lactation care providers, especially, I think that it really is important that they're encountering consistent messaging. And so if we get the consistent messaging down, and all the people we work with in the hospital can get that consistent messaging down, and we know, you know, we're all like looking for the same things. We're all looking for the same markers of good breastfeeding and potential red flags. You know, that's the other thing about the First 100 Hours program. It's like, it's a lens that allows us to really focus on getting breastfeeding started well and picking up on potential problems quickly, not letting things become a problem, whether it's sore nipples and a poor latch or a red flag for milk production problems, anything like that. Pick it up quickly and have the continuity of care in place to make sure that it gets dealt with.
Right. I love what you said about like consumer-driven demand. So it's almost like, you know, if we can empower families with knowledge and wisdom and I mean, sometimes just pure courage, like just speak up, you know. I mean, there's this whole like white coat, you know, thing where it's like, oh, I just didn't say anything, you know. To want to breastfeed, which we know the majority do, but to be really confident in that resolve, you know, to talk to them prenatally about, you know, how to set those goals and then not just set a goal. I want to do this. I want to do X, Y, and Z. I want to breastfeed for this long. But then do you have a plan? What is your plan? Like, how are you going to come up against some of this stuff? And you said that some of that is in your book. So let's talk about your book. Is the audience, parents, providers, everyone, who is the book written for? Just like social media.
That is such a hard question. And it took me years to really figure that out. And I think that what I came out with ultimately is a book that will appeal to both parents and healthcare workers, because It's accessible. It's written with language that makes sense to everybody every day. And my parents are reading it right now, and they are not healthcare. They've never been involved in healthcare. They're reading it. Well, I mean, they're reading it because they're my parents, but they're reading it from, I wanted them to come into it from a perspective of they didn't really know a whole lot about lactation. And so having them read it, having people around me reading it who are not involved in lactation and sort of getting that so that if you were an expectant parent, if you were a new parent and you read this, you would think, yeah, that's a story that makes sense like that.
Right.
Okay, now I understand the story of how lactation is supposed to happen. And I say lactation because the other part of this process, this approach that evolved over the years was this understanding that this isn't really an approach that is designed to, like we say, the baby-friendly hospital initiatives designed to promote and increase exclusive breastfeeding rates. This isn't really about that. This is about preserving people's capacity to have their lactation journey look the way that they want to. So, getting that settled from the start, having the right pieces in place so that if somebody's plan is to exclusively pump, cool, here's the stuff we've got to do even on day one and two to make sure that you really are going to make all the milk that you need. Because if you don't get that information until late, or if you start exclusively pumping because you have to, because breastfeeding fails, but nobody gives you information about that. Because when you were in the hospital, you were only breastfeeding, right? So they didn't teach you about pumping. So what did you do? You got out your insurance pump or you bought a pump and you're figuring it out. Because everybody believes that breast pumps are supposed to be intuitive or you can figure it out or watch a video online and figure it out. And that doesn't really work for most people. They need the expertise of somebody who, is trained to help them work through this. Again, it's not knowledge locked in a box until you pay me. You can have all the knowledge you want, but you won't know what to do with it if you don't talk to somebody who understands how flange fitting matters and how it actually is going to work on your body. So all of those pieces are incorporated in a way that makes it less like intensively, oh, exclusive breastfeeding approach here. It's more like, let's as much breastfeeding as possible, as much expression of milk as possible, especially by hand, so that we are preserving that capacity to make your lactation journey look as, as exactly as you want it to look, however you want that to be. And I think that's what gets skipped sometimes. I
Yeah.
think that it's not like exclusive breastfeeding or nothing, or formula feeding or partial breastfeeding. Like, stop with the labels. It doesn't, that stuff doesn't help. If you are, if we're working with one person in the first 100 hours, we're working with them, we're getting breastfeeding started. Something comes up, they have a medical indication to use some formula. They do. They still have all the knowledge, they still have all the experiences of all the, 18 breastfeedings they did before that and after that and through it, right? So they're going to have all those pieces still in place so that when they look around and say, wait a minute, now I'm formula feeding a lot. How did this happen? I wanted to breastfeed. They know what to, like how to get back into it. Because I think that's something that parents often need ways to say to, when something's coming up in their situation, if they're getting help that you or I would say, well, that's not really very supportive. Parents don't always know how to question that. And I think one of the things that they can always think to themselves and then maybe, sort of learn to say out loud is, but wait, I thought I wanted to breastfeed. Or, but wait, I wanted to breastfeed. And what you're telling me, I'm not sure that's going to work with breastfeeding.
Right.
Asking those questions is going to put the other person on the spot. So they're going to have to say, oh, actually, you know what? I don't know how this is all going to work together. Maybe you should see this lactation person. Or, you know what? You're right. Maybe we can wait a couple more hours. Maybe we can wait till that next blood test. Whatever the thing is,
Right.
we might be able to build in a little bit of space so that parents can have more time to make decisions. Because so often it's presented to them like, you have to do this and you have to do it now. Or you're not taking your baby home, or something like that. That's not really medically valid. It's just sort of a convenience kind of thing. So we really want to take that out of there. And we know that it's hard to change things institutionally, but it's not hard to change patients when you teach them and when you give them those kind of tools to say something like, but wait, I wanted to breastfeed. And that's something they can use with the people in their lives that are not being totally supportive either, that are saying things like, well, you should just pump, or you should just give some formula, or you should just stop breastfeeding. That's what I did. Or that's, I heard that, that's really helpful for a lot of people. The answer is, but wait, that's not what I wanted to do. Or, it can also be used for like somebody who's saying, well, you know what? Breastfeeding was so awesome for me. And you look like you're really struggling with that pump. You should just breastfeed. But wait,
Right.
right? I wanted to use a pump. It's important to me. So, what can you tell me about that? Who can
Right.
help me with that? Because I think that stuff gets skipped. We don't always give people those kind of tools.
Yeah, no, 100%. I use, is this an emergency? That's what I teach all my prenatal. This is your question. This is what you're going to ask, especially when it comes to things like supplementing. In the hospital, which we know gets done so many times unnecessarily. Not always unnecessarily, but many times. And so I teach them, just ask, is this an emergency? Because if it's an emergency, you're going to do what you have to do, and I'm going to support you through that, But if it's not, then we do have space, and we do have some time, and we can ask some questions, and we can remember that goal, but wait. So that's so smart, to bring, just come back to that, come back to what it was that you wanted to do and why. Like, identify your why and like really hold on to that, because it you're gonna need to be solid in that resolve, because of how you're gonna have to make decisions and sort of navigate the journey, because for most of us it's not very straightforward. So the book is called The First 100 Hours.
Well, the book is, the full title is
Timing.
Evolving the Modern Breastfeeding Experience: Holistic Lactation Care in the First 100 Hours.
Ah, I love it. I can't wait to read it.
Thank you. I hope you will read it right away as soon as it
Oh, I will.
comes out.
Tell us
It's coming
that.
out on April 2nd. So it'll be a couple weeks from when we're recording this. And I'm just really excited about this concept of, all the things that you just said. People making new decisions, people making new plans, having to navigate problems, medically necessary formula use, needing to start pumping for any reason. I feel like there's so much that we can gain by remembering that breastfeeding itself is actually very simple. It's all that other stuff and people's attitudes and lack of support, structural barriers, all those things make it hard. It makes it hard for people to trust it. And that's a real thing. That's a really, really important part of what I learned from working with so many people in the hospital and then later in the community. Because often I would see somebody in the hospital, later they would come to Baby Cafe, and their entire attitude about everything was changed. Because you can see the change that happens for people in those first days after birth, the way that hormones are meant to work in new, brand new motherhood is that they put you in a place where you're supposed to be nurturing and protecting your baby. You're not supposed to be analyzing things, you're not supposed to be making really complicated decisions, you're not supposed to have to do anything but protect, nourish and recover from childbirth. And so many people get thrust into situations where it's like all they're doing is analyzing and making decisions and fighting things off and all of that. And let's face it, this is a very commercially driven world. So people are already facing messaging that is telling them things, many things that are false, but many things also that are not helpful and that are confusing the situation. So, they're getting all this messaging about stuff they need to have and apps they need to use and product marketing. You need this for breastfeeding and you need this kind of formula and you have to have that kind of a pump and all these things. And they aren't equipped to deal with that in the first days of breastfeeding. If we overload people with stuff, if we overload them with decisions and analysis, it becomes really hard for them to simply breastfeed and recover. So, in some situations, they might breastfeed, but they don't recover very well, right? So then you see people with physical, recoveries that take longer, with mental health struggles later on, because they've had to simply set their own needs on a shelf and take care of their baby. We don't want that. We want everything built into the way that we care for people in the earliest hours and days of lactation so that that's all we think about. We think about breastfeeding, we think about milk expression, we think about holding the baby skin to skin nearly all the time is the phrase that I like to use, and recovery, because all those things work together. Recovery from childbirth is part of and is facilitated by all of those things. Using a breast pump is not really something that's facilitating rest. Requires analysis, requires thinking about how a machine works. There's just so many things. And we know that there's situations where people have to do that. And it used to be we would have this reaction like, oh my, the baby's gone to the NICU. Now this poor person has to pump. That must be really, really stressful. But now all of a sudden, we see pumps getting wheeled in everywhere for every little problem. And we're like, hold on. What if we could solve this problem with something that didn't require a machine? Maybe we'll use a machine down the road, but right now, is there any way we can do it without stuff, right? And I think that you would really understand that, based on everything that you're putting out there through your social media platform. And I really appreciate what I see from you because I think it makes people think, and I know that it makes some people mad. And I know that what I've put in the book is probably going to make people mad about certain things, but it's all, I think I can speak for you on this. It's coming from this place of wanting to preserve and protect, this very fleeting time period. My children are in their 20s. So, yes, it was intense when they were babies. Everything was intense, and every little need felt like it was my responsibility, but it passes. And if we can make those experiences better, I guess that's what we were put here for.
100%. Yeah, I say a lot like, I want you to have choices. I want to preserve your choice. And I think sometimes my point of view on social media gets misunderstood that it's breastfeeding or bust. And it's like, that's not it at all. This is about certainly informed choice, and we don't talk enough about risks of doing certain things, risks and benefits. But that family, that mother, that baby deserves, to have those options be, as you said, preserved and protected, so that they can meet their goal, whatever that goal might look like. And yes, I so relate to what you're saying, about the pumping, just from my personal experience. And I'll admit, since we're talking and we started this conversation sort of talking about like our baggage and our that's a, I felt myself getting a little bit like activated because of my own trauma. And when my baby was born, we were separated immediately, and he was in the NICU, and I immediately started pumping, and the hospital I was in a foreign country, and the nursing staff was not on the same page as me as far as, support. So what that ended up looking like was I'm pumping and walking my own colostrum, and then eventually milk, mature milk when everything started moving and shaking like it should. I'm walking it down the hall, up the elevator, across the breezeway to the NICU myself, 8 hours after, this traumatic, fast, unmedicated delivery. That is not conducive to rest. That is not conducive to mental health. That is not conducive to all of those things that families deserve. And so for me, it is a bias. It is a trigger point for me when somebody describes that that was their scenario. You know, the baby was otherwise healthy, but you know, I just wasn't quite sure. So I got a pump and I'm like, why? You know, I had to do that and it was torture and it was awful. Why would you choose that? Why would you accept that? But it is one of those things that I do see sort of being increasingly normalized. And that's discouraging, but is also a wake-up call for us, you know, doing this work. We have to stay on top of what is being normal. Like, what is the culture? Like, what are the 25-year-olds? Where are they getting their information? Social media. What are they putting on their registry? Right? Anything techie, all the fancy, you know. So, and we have a pumping culture, you know. I see it in my area for sure. Lots of people are, oh, just pump, just pump, just pump, with no understanding, like you said, of flange fit and how this machine really works. And I can't tell you how many times I've said, now remember, this machine is designed to try to mimic a baby. So what would your baby do if the flow slowed down or stopped at the breast? Okay, well, she'd start suckling again a little bit more rapidly, right? Because they've made that connection. And then I think, well, then we got to push a button on this pump. We got to change something. You know, it doesn't just know what to do. Like you said, it's not intuitive. So that's definitely something I've seen as well.
I think that one of the things I've seen, I've been in the field long enough to start to really internalize that we may not be able to change, you know, and it may not be the best thing to say, you know, we don't want to normalize something that's outside of normal physiology. I mean, things are going to get normalized because they're going to get normalized.
Yeah.
What's really frustrating for me is that when things get normalized for money reasons, financial reasons, people are making money off it, right? Or for just lack of appropriate teaching in the beginning, in the first 100 hours. Sorry, I can't stop. Like, people who know me know I never stop talking about this.
Yeah.
If you don't teach people how to hand express their milk in the first 100 hours, you have failed them. Like, you have completely failed them. Because it is breastfeeding. It is part of breastfeeding. I don't care if at 2 weeks your plan is to be exclusively pumping. You still need to know how to hand express because I have seen 100 situations where people who are exclusively pumping find themselves up a creek without a paddle or up a creek without a pump. Because suddenly they have no electricity, their parts don't work, something's wrong with the pump, they don't have. It just, there's so very many reasons. And I think if you look at the world around us, you can name all these regions of conflict and you can see all these things happening where mothers and babies are being put at risk because they're in places like refugee camps and they're hiding out and they're in places where they don't have access to things. That is basic fundamental lactation to teach someone how to latch their baby and to teach them how to get their own milk out. Why would we be skipping that in a supposedly developed nation? Why would we be skipping over that? The only reason it could be money, financial incentive, or ignorance of the information or laziness. It better not be laziness. It better be that you didn't know that hand expression is breastfeeding. It better be that when you hear someone say that, you're like, oh, yeah. We got to do that, right? And it really better not be because someone's paying you to push breastfeeding products and tools and devices onto new parents. And if you make a product that is for breastfeeding parents, good. I hope it works extremely well. And I want you to be able to market it. But you don't need to not, you certainly don't need to push it on people whose babies are brand new. And don't send me your free samples. I'm not going to work for you
There
to promote your products. I don't care how good they are. They might be literally the product I recommend to everybody, but I'm not going to be a spokesperson for you or an affiliate or anything like that. It's really important that we draw these lines. We have to make these boundaries because that's what actually protects our clients and their capacity to breastfeed.
Well, you know that you are preaching to the choir on that one because that is my
Absolutely.
hill and I die on it daily. It's funny because I had a company reach out to me, a very small company who makes like a modified swaddle type device. And I was just very honest and said, you know, swaddling is something that I generally don't advise with my clients just because that's my research that I've done, and it's not something that I generally promote for most babies. I probably wouldn't be the best person to send that to. It was my nice way of saying, like, what you just said, I don't want your product. I'm not being a spokesperson, right? And they were like, well, we'll just send it to you anyway.
No.
I mean, why? Why do you want to send it to me anyway? I'm telling you, I'm not going to engage here, you know? But I think that that's, well, I know that that's happening, and you know how I feel about that happening because I talk about it a lot. Why do you think we, because I feel like we sort of have this divide being created. And I guess I'm curious why you think it's happening. And is it a new thing, or have we always sort of had, you know, like the IBCLCs or the, I'll just say the lactation care providers, you know, doesn't necessarily have to be IBCLCs, but the lactation professionals that are like you and I, like we have, nope, don't send it. I'm not partnering. I'm not, you know, even if that was the formula that I used when I did also combo feed, I'm not going to be your spokesperson for your product. And then those that are like, sure. You know, what I am referring to as code blind. Is that a
That's
new thing?
brilliant, by the way.
Thank you
Brilliant term.
so much. Thank you so much. I feel like it sums up, and it just sort of came to me. I will fully admit, you know, it was like, that's it. That's what it is. It's putting these blinders on to the whole purpose of the code, because I was seeing people say things like, well, I disclosed it. Well, I put it's a paid partnership. Well, I did this, and this is what our, you know, code of professional conduct says. And this is, and I'm like, okay. And there's no law in the United States saying you can't do that, but it's so blind to
Well,
the
you know,
point.
you're right. And I want to make this distinction for our listeners really quickly. When we talk about the WHO code, we're talking about a very specific set of products that are named in the code that are, you know, the code is designed to protect parents from predatory marketing of these products to them during what is known as a vulnerable period of their life. What we are seeing that is also, you know, leaking into that is when you said, you know, do you think this has always been happening? Yes, but we have all of these other products, this proliferation of products that are designed to support people who are breastfeeding and pumping, and expressing their milk, feeding their milk in other ways, all of these things that people are doing. There's so much stuff that you can buy that's out there for that. I think the value of user-generated content and affiliate marketing and influencers, the value of that is much higher. It's not that, oh, today's people are more vulnerable to, you know, influencer kind of marketing. No, we've always been vulnerable to that. We've always been human beings who say, my sister's using that and she says it's good. That's the one I'm going to pick, right? For no other reason than my sister said it's good. That's just more well known and it's being taken advantage of. And that's what's really hard. And I think that because there's all these other products, you've got, you know, it feels like your social media platform is really working on specifically the WHO code covered products. Infant formula and foods that are being marketed to young children, which are completely outside of science, right? Toddler formulas, nonsense, basically. sugary drinks that are for toddlers. So you're kind of dealing with that. I'm more concerned, me personally, over here. I'm also very, very concerned about all of these products. Because here's the thing. Like I said, it could be the greatest product in the world that I find super helpful in this situation when I work with clients. You know, I think many people might need it. But when you take on being a representative of someone else's company, first of all, you never know anything about that company. You don't know their manufacturing processes. Are they using child labor? Are, you know, just things like that that you don't even think about, right? You don't know where they're sourcing their products. You don't know anything about that. Even if they tell you, they don't really have to tell you the truth. So you're taking money from someone you don't understand. But you are also making a whole lot of assumptions about the people you are trying to influence and what they can afford or access or need. And I do not want to be the person that makes somebody feel like she can't breastfeed anymore because she can't get the thing that I said she needs to have if she's a breastfeeding mom. I am so, that worries me so much, right? Like I remember the days when nobody could get breast pumps and you only could get one if you had WIC, right? And then I would have to tell somebody, you know, like the best thing for this would be if you had an electric breast pump. And they'd be like, nope, can't, there's no way. I don't qualify for WIC. And so we would work with a hand pump. We would do whatever we could, you know, to make sure that we could make that situation work. I would feel so bad for even bringing it up. Like there's, it wasn't going to happen. And I think that's, you know, we don't think about that. We just think that we're putting these messages out there that, well, anybody can buy it. It's just a $10 nipple cream. What about when you can't? What about when that $10, what does that $10 mean to someone else in your family, to your other children, to your spouse, to the rest of your monthly supplies? Who are we to say to somebody, you have to have this stuff to breastfeed? Are they going to choose to not breastfeed because they can't have that stuff? You can't guarantee that. So I am going to teach you as an IBCLC how to breastfeed with the least amount of stuff possible. If you want to learn about other stuff, I will be happy to talk to you about that, teach you how to use it, tell you where to get it. But I'm not going to be the one that tells you you have to have this thing or this is never going to work for you. That is a huge red flag for me. You know, anything in lactation, anything in parenting where they say to you, you have to do it this way or it's not going to work, or your kid's going to be bad, or your kid's never going to get out of your bed, or they're never going to not be in a baby carrier, whatever thing people say. If it's one way or the other, that's not true because we've been raising people for all of time, right? And there's lots and lots of ways to do it. So that's kind of my stance on what we're doing with all this stuff. And I don't think it's a bad thing to be the IBCLC who knows about pumps or who learns about flange. Like, you need to know that. Those are skills for your job, literally. But the basic fundamental skill is teaching people how to breastfeed if they don't have any of the stuff, so that then if they want to use stuff or they need to, they can add it on. But you've already got the base. You've got to be able to add it on. You don't build a house without a foundation.
I also did a post on that this morning talking about, everything being an intervention. And it came up in a training that I did on Monday with some home visitors who are not lactation trained at all. And I was tasked with teach these home visitors what they need to know to support breastfeeding. And it was this really great opportunity for me to challenge myself because my task isn't turn them into lactation consultants, teach them how to do my job, teach, it was truly how, what is the most basic fundamental way that they can support a client who might be having a problem? And so we talked about like this pyramid, we have to start at the bottom and boob, baby, hand, if it's attached to her body, we can use it, but you don't have tools. I'm not giving you tools. You don't have a bag of nipple shields, and so it was such an eye-opening moment for them to realize they actually could do quite a bit.
Yes.
you know, and they were really empowered to think,
Yes.
oh, I don't need any of those neat things that you have over there on the table, you know, that you're showing us. No, you don't need any of this, you know. And if that mom and baby does need something, you know, we were developing a referral process and I'm available for those higher level, you know, needs, but you actually can support that mom probably without me at all if you just understand that foundation. So, yeah, so brilliant, so beautiful. So just to kind of tie a bow on like the WHO code and the marketing and the influencer, because you're so right, and I did an episode on my podcast about this whole thing. What would you say, like, what's the call to action? What do we need? Let's talk about IBCLCs because we are held to, well, I'll say we have committed to a high standard, I believe, of ethics and professionalism. How well we are held to that standard and what repercussions there are, that's, I think, up for some debate, at least from where I sit. What I've been saying, because I'm just blunt, is pick a side. Pick a side. You have to decide, are you going to be someone who can stand strong, you know, in that, like what we're talking about? No, don't send it. I'm not doing it. Or can you be bought? You know, and I'll say really quick, I was out to dinner with my husband a while back and we were sort of talking about this. And I said, oh, I wouldn't partner with a formula company for $1 million. And he said, well, honey, $1 million. And I said, okay, hold on. Let me tell you about this ministry in Nigeria. And I have an episode that I'm releasing the day before your book comes out, April 1st. Talking with the founder of this ministry in Nigeria. And so I started telling him about it. And he was like, you're right. Don't take it. Don't take it. Not for $1 million. And then he said, if you need to go to Nigeria, you can go. And I was like, all right, good, because it's on the bucket list. I'm going to support the community there at some point one day. So yeah, I feel like unless there was a loophole and I could give that $1 million directly to, you know, some sort of grassroots thing that was happening, but I digress. What's the call to action? Do you agree? Am I being too harsh?
No, I mean, I think you have to think about it this way. For our listeners, are they feeling like that is where they are right now in their lactation career? Are you feeling like what you can do now to make this situation better is to, straighten up your own house, take your personal responsibility, simplify, clean it up, make sure whatever it is that you're doing, you are completely 100% confident that you are doing the right thing. And if you are feeling like, somebody like you or me who are taking a bigger platform to try to influence other lactation care providers, and you're asking for a call to action, it's, how can you leverage the relationships that you have or the platform that you have to educate others about this information? That's what you're doing. That's what I'm doing in a different way. That's what people do. A lot of times people do that on a very granular basis in the hospital where they work, or in the WIC office where they work, or in the private practice where they work. They're looking for ways to make sure that their house is clean, basically. And I think that's what everybody should be, make sure that your house is clean. And then if you are at that point where you feel like you have influence over others, then you should be influencing others on behalf of mothers and babies, not on behalf of your follower count and not on behalf of your bank account. So I think that's probably the simplest way to look at it. And, I drew the distinction earlier between products that are marketed or products that are covered by the WHO code and products that are not, but are also related. And I think that We also have to think about the spirit of the WHO code, which is to protect the vulnerable. And we have a platform as IBCLCs, as lactation care providers, we have a platform that offers us the opportunity to be in places, to stand in rooms where we influence mothers and babies. If we have the opportunity to influence them, we better be protecting them. So if we're not, that feels like that's something that needs to be cleaned up.
Yeah, I agree. I think, though, that some people view taking this feeding neutral, non-push, fed is best, like that is protecting moms and babies because what about mental health? Like, there's just so much out there. What do you say to those people?
Well, we've seen enough actual scientific articles over the years to understand that fed is best is a marketing message, just like a lot of those other ones are. The real push, the real increase in messaging around mental health and breastfeeding has come in the past few years, obviously through what you've seen in formula. That was not a thing people really talked about before, and on any level that was audible. Beyond the work that we do as lactation care providers, suddenly it's amplified. Do you know why? Because mental health itself is also suddenly amplified since the pandemic, since around that time. So they simply took advantage. So you can look in there and you can see where they've taken advantage of the larger conversation about mental health being important, which, of course, obviously, it is incredibly important to protect mental health. But when you see people taking advantage of that message to sell something or to influence people into making different health behaviors, which are not following scientific knowledge, that's where it starts to become problematic. So I spent enough years and had enough problems with blood pressure dealing with the fed is best marketing message. No, I don't go there anymore. I don't even worry about it because that's all it is. It's a hashtag. It's, something that gets people riled up. It's not important. We've debunked it essentially. What is important is that, people have varying degrees of how important it is to be inclusive in the way that they practice and in the way that they speak to others through, one-to-one or through social media or however they communicate, maybe on their podcasts or whatever. And that's normal because we're human beings. So we're bringing our personal universe of knowledge and background and perspective. And I think that's important because if, you're in a place where you've never really thought about it, whatever this person is saying is important for inclusivity, then you're going to hear that and be like, oh, yeah, wait a minute. Hold on. Am I doing that? Am I there yet? Am I, do I understand why? Are they really right? Like, is that really a thing that happens? And so you can definitely learn from that. And so I think there's always going to be levels of how that is. It doesn't have to be a them versus us kind of thing. It doesn't have to be she's more inclusive than him or like anything like that. I think you show those things by your actions and how you treat the people that are in your care. Obviously, people sometimes use their platforms to put out messages that are also meant to say, people should be treating people well. That's sort of a basic human thing. And when it comes from that, you can tell. If it's coming from, like you said earlier, virtue signaling, you can see right through it. It's transparent. And when it's coming from a place of genuinely caring, then that's usually pretty obvious. So I think, like what you said in your post, it's not something that people are using to pick, I'm going to go to this lactation consultant over that lactation consultant because of what they said on social media. Except if you say something that's really, obviously that's really terrible, that offends people. So, but people's, sensitivities to things are different too. So it's never going to be perfect. You have to be true to yourself and what you know to be helpful for the people that you're serving. And I've had this conversation about is the WHO code still necessary in today's day? And It's 2024. Had this conversation in 2018. So many things have happened in that time frame that have gone on to prove that the WHO code is absolutely still necessary. Now we also have the digital marketing research and papers that have been written about the influence of digital marketing of infant formula. It's like a whole separate toolkit that you use to monitor this. So you've got the, product base, and then you've got your digital base. So there's so much to it. It's still absolutely, in my opinion, extremely relevant based on everything that I've learned. And that has absolutely no bearing on how I personally feel about infant formula or how I work with people who are using it or recommend it or anything like that. But
Right.
it's not my job or my role to promote it. Like there's no circumstance in which I need to do that. I only talk about products one to one. I don't talk about them in a public venue. I don't need to. That's then I'm a marketer.
Right.
I want to market my services, right? I don't
Right.
want to market their stuff. Doesn't
Yeah.
really make any sense to me.
Right, I agree. And all of those things, again, are a tool, including formula. And so they have a time and a place and all of that. So, well, one thing I do want to market is your book. So,
I appreciate that.
April 2nd, so excited. It's actually just in time for my birthday. My birthday is the 6th. So I'm
Oh,
going
a
to get your
perfect
book
birthday
as a
present.
birthday gift to myself. And I can't wait to read it. And I'm just so grateful that we've been able to spend some time talking. We've actually been talking for quite a while. I feel like I could talk to you all day, but I don't want to take too much of your time. Is there anything else, just your infinite wisdom, Christine, that you can share or anything, that you want to just pass on to anyone who might be listening?
Well, I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about the book and really about everything that I've learned over the years. And I, in no way, say that I know everything. I'm simply, through the book and through all the work that I do, I'm trying to share what I've learned and why I think it's important. And I'm always open to conversation, especially if you disagree with me, especially if you have had a different experience. Because that is just the best opportunity for learning and growing. And I think we all, should aspire to grow whenever we have that space. There's going to be, if you're new here, welcome. What you're going to find over your career is that there's going to be times when you are super busy and you are professionally just so much going on. And then there's going to be times where you feel like, professionals under control, personal life super busy, right? Things are happening, kids growing, whatever's happening in your life. Maybe you're getting a master's or you're getting new credentials or something like that. You're going to have phases, and as you go through these phases, you're going to have opportunities for growth in your lactation career. There's so many things you can do when you want to grow, and they all start with building relationships. The person you talk to at a lactation conference might be the person who you have a conversation and you decide to write an article together for clinical lactation. Or it could be a person who encourages you to do research. It could be a person who gives you the courage and the strength to open a private practice. Like there's so many ways that we grow through those connections. And, the book will inspire you for some of those things too. It will inspire you if you work in a hospital to make change, no matter how small you think it is, it's important. And if you don't work in a hospital, it's going to give you this background on what's happening before your client gets to you. If you don't work in lactation, it's going to give you a better understanding of the whole context of why it seems like you're seeing all of this chaos around breastfeeding on social media and why that seems so controversial or problematic, or why it seems so stressful for people. It's going to give you things that are actionable and, a new way to think about things. And again, I welcome conversation, argument, debate, feedback. I love it all because it just gives me new ideas for more stuff I'm going to write or say later.
Yeah, absolutely. And you nailed it when you said earlier, like, I know you're thinking about how you can turn that. And I am. And I actually try to be very real time. Number one, because if I get an idea and I don't act on it, I'll probably forget. And number two, because if it's out there and it's something that's happening, whether it's happening, in a one-on-one setting with a client, or it's something I'm seeing from someone else on social media, that's not the only person that has that question or that had that perspective or that misinformation. And so a lot of things, I try to just be, as real time and time relevant as I can be, because it's an ever-changing field. So yeah, for
Love
those
that.
who are new here, welcome. Like Christine said,
Absolutely.
welcome. It is it's the best job in the world. And like any other field, there's different perspectives and sometimes there's some drama and but gosh, it's so important and such a privilege to what we
It
do.
is.
And that's why it really burns me, some of these things that I get kind of riled up about, because this is such an honor and we're coming alongside the most vulnerable people. Who's more vulnerable than a brand new postpartum mom and a newborn baby?
Vulnerable and strong.
Yes. Yes.
Nope.
Vulnerable doesn't mean weak. Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. Vulnerable and incredibly strong and incredibly.
Resilient.
So, such a privilege to do what we do and to connect and build relationships. And this has just been like the highlight of my afternoon. So I just can't thank you enough.
I feel like we're those all those famous podcasters now who do like 3, 4, 5 hour podcast episodes. And I know there's people who think that's nuts, and they're like, I don't know who those people think they are, or who would listen to a 5 hour podcast. I have. I mean, if it's good, I'm gonna listen to it.
If it's people talking, and that's what I found. Like, I mean, your lactation lab, lactation training lab, what your episodes were not usually super long, so it was really nice for my drive, like I said. But I remember they would end and I'd say, wait, I want more. Keep talking, because it felt like I was, sort of sitting there at the table. And so I agree. I hope we have lots of people listen to us. And of course, it's been so interesting to talk and listen to you as well. And so I think people, absolutely, if it's something interesting and it's something you love to learn about and you want to hear it from people that have knowledge and have gifts and wisdom to share, then yeah, I'd listen all day.
Yeah, and I also welcome anybody who's new, anybody who's thinking about maybe doing a podcast in lactation. Do it. Like we absolutely, there's something to be gained from everybody who is willing to sit in front of a microphone even one time and share what they know, what they think, what they've seen. It all matters. You don't have to be a professional. You don't have to know how to edit things. It's so user-friendly to make a podcast. It's like the easiest way to get information out there. So I look forward to having so many lactation podcasts in my queue that it's hard to keep up with all the new episodes. Please join us.
Yeah, I wish I that would be that you're right. That would be amazing. Yeah, I remember when I started mine, I was having some imposter syndrome, like, I don't know what I'm doing. And it was like, who cares? Just
Nothing's perfect. There's no perfect one that you're emulating. You're emulating all the ones you've ever heard. And some of them are, like highly produced, and some of them are a person in their closet. So, hi, I'm the person in
Same.
the closet.
I love that. I love that so much. Well, Christine, this has been an absolute pleasure. Again, thank you so much for your time.
Thank
And
you.
yeah, just best of luck with the book release. And I can't wait, like I said, to read it.